We're going to finish the Bhishma Dev section this evening, Krishna permitting. We ended with great exaltations made by Grandfather Bhishma honoring Krishna. And there's only 5 or 6 verses remaining. In those 5 or 6 verses remaining, Grandfather Bhishma just stops. He stops his external activities. He completely absorbs himself in internal absorption upon the Supreme Lord. He stops speaking, he stops breathing, and he goes back to Godhead. And everyone is stunned. They make the funeral arrangements for Grandfather Bhishma. The sages, they perform the rites and sing Vedic hymns. Grandfather Maharaj Yudhisthira returns to Hastinapur and similarly consoles Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, and then he assumes the kingdom, the role as ruling the kingdom. That's the storyline. The details are, Suta Goswami explained, after Grandfather Bhishma spoke all these words of glorification of Krishna, he suddenly became silent. His breathing stopped. Bhishma Dev, the way that Prabhupada has translated it, is he merged himself in the super soul, and he explains that in the purport what that means. Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with his mind, speech, sight, and actions. So everything was going on externally, and then he just withdrew everything internally. Like, this is like the yogi in the pratyahara. Pratyahara, that stage of the Eightfold Yoga System, is withdrawing the senses. Withdrawing the senses doesn't mean like your arms disappear inside your body, and your legs disappear inside your body, and your ears disappear inside your head. What it means is that the organs of action, the organs of sense perception, there's the gross organs and the subtle sense. Just like in the story of Paranjan, the allegorical story told by Narada to King Prajinipari. There's an allegorical city that's the kingdom of Paranjan. Paranjan is the sense enjoyer, living entity. And then there's a city. Then inside the city, there are different soldiers. And some of those soldiers are of different numbers, representing different things. So within the body, there's the subtle sense. Just like, for example, if people break a leg, then they can put on a prosthesis, a false leg. Or they have the ability of locomotion. So people that are crippled, they can't move with locomotion, but they have the power of locomotion, and so another machine is put in place of the God-given machine, and they have locomotion. You've all, at least here in India, they have this, they do this thing, and the little scooter goes forward, bicycle, tricycle. That's possible because there's the power of locomotion within the living entity. And life in this realm is consciousness, and those subtle senses are extended through the medium of the body. And then people exhibit consciousness. But when what Bhishma Dev is doing here is he has withdrawn consciousness. He's not unconscious. He's not, the soul doesn't die. They just withdrew consciousness from his duties of taking care of Yudhisthira and the Pandavas and all of his other kingly duties or royal duties. So his internally the mind, speech, sight, just like the eye. So if the eye is damaged, they can repair the eye. These certain kinds of damage they can repair. And actions. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains this is called Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Previously he was in Samadhi by extending his senses. Now he's in Samadhi by withdrawing his senses and withdrawing consciousness from external actions. So this merging with the Super Soul, Prabhupada explains, means he just concentrated his subtle mind on remembering the different activities of the Lord within himself, thinking of the Lord, and everything else shut down externally. Now his whole life was a preparation for that moment. His whole life he was situated properly and perfectly. In fact, someone here, yeah, it explains he could have done this because he was such a yogi. He could have done this at any moment. Just like we were saying to Dichi, he gave up his body at will. He means he could have done it at any point, but only when there was cause and when his purposes of service to Krishna were fulfilled, Bhishma Dev did that. And when Bhishma Dev did that with Krishna personally present. He acknowledged, this is Krishna's special kindness. Now, what about for us? Krishna's not kind, right? We don't deserve that Krishna be kind, right? Krishna manifests his kindness in a different way. Same Krishna in sound form, sound vibration. And especially for us, the sound vibration form is his holy name, and his sound vibration form is Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. These sound vibrations are not different than Krishna. On several occasions, without detailing it, I heard Prabhupada say he would state this common argument that people make. I've heard it many times, and Prabhupada stated it factually. Many people make this claim. Oh, I'll never become God conscious. Because Arjuna, he had Krishna right before him speaking Bhagavad Gita. What chance is there for us to have Krishna come and speak Bhagavad Gita? It's not going to happen. Arjuna can become spiritually perfected. How can we become spiritually perfected? And Prabhupada would go, no! When Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita, and someone repeats the words of Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita, that speaking is non-different. Krishna is speaking. And then he would say it again. That speaking in disciplic succession, although it appears it's coming from someone else's mouth, it's Krishna speaking. It's Krishna's words. Sarva dharmam prityaja mamekam. And one just simply repeats. Only instead of saying first person singular, surrender unto me, we say surrender unto him. And it's none different. This is very important. This is very important because this is the mystery of disciplic succession. Without getting into the particular persons involved, someone was explaining to me that recently they received an instruction. That is, my dear devotee, you should become more humble. You should really strive to become more humble. And they said when they heard that instruction, first thing they felt was hurt. And that hurt lasted for like a day. But then the second thing they realized was the person is right and the person is very kind. Because although I've been going through my life being, you know, protecting myself and being, you know, like I am, no one has ever really, in such the same manner, spoken like this. Very compassionately and very directly. And I said, and the greater thing for you to learn is that message, that's Krishna. This is your relationship with Krishna being established through an instruction given by Krishna's representative. Same thing as Prabhupada saying, Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, but that's not going to happen for us. Can't become Krishna conscious. No! When someone simply speaks the message of Krishna in disciplic succession, Krishna speaking. It's the postal letter deliverer metaphor that Prabhupada uses. Someone writes a letter and they seal the letter, put the stamp on, it goes into the government post office box, somebody picks up the mail, they sort the mail, they deliver it to your home. It's from the person who's handing you the letter is not the person who wrote the letter, but the message is from the person who wrote the letter. Right? Lest the postal department open up the letter, hey, look at that letter, let me change a few things, seal it back up and hand it to you. That's not what postal people are supposed to do. Generally they don't do that, although in India sometimes, especially if it has money inside, I have experience, they open mail. I had to come all the way from Vrindavan to Delhi to identify who I was because they had opened a letter that had $20 in it. They wanted me to prove that I was who I was. You know, what business do they have opening up the mail anyway? Oh, it's got some money inside. Let's open it up. I'm surprised they even bothered to call me. Just take the $20 and throw the envelope out. Anyway. India is a very special place in certain ways. But postal deliverers are not supposed to open mail. In America, it's a federal offense. They can be put in jail for that. India, it's some money in their pocket for doing that. So when someone who is in the disciplic succession, they're repeating, Krishna says, surrender unto him. That's Krishna's letter. It's got your name on it, and your name on it, and your name on it. Surrender to Krishna. That's Krishna speaking. That's what Prabhupada has taught us. And that's our relationship with Krishna. And we can say, thank you, I surrender unto you, Krishna. Or whatever the instruction is. Control the mind. How do I control the mind? Take Krishna's instruction and follow it. Whatever the mind wanders, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, bring the mind back under the control of the self. It's Krishna's instruction. Within the instruction that Krishna gives, within the instruction the spiritual master gives, which is nothing other than Krishna's instruction, the potency, whatever strength one needs to fulfill that instruction is there within the instruction. It's a complete package. So, the scriptures are our opportunity. This is an instruction about, or like a lesson in how to give up the body. Grandfather Bhishma focused his mind and focused his eyes and focused his words, focused everything upon Krishna. We can do the same through sound. When someone is leaving their body, just like Prabhupada, what he wanted in Vrindavan was kirtan. Very soft kirtan. Live kirtan. And if there isn't live kirtan, then recorded kirtan. And someone comes to visit, just read Srimad Bhagavatam. No talking about so-and-so married so-and-so and all that stuff. The family stuff. This scriptural sound vibration. So the mind can be absorbed in Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. And that's something that we can do presently. To keep our consciousness, train our consciousness to go to Krishna. Krishna is making his association available to us in that way. His name, his instructions, his pastimes, his qualities. Here we're hearing wonderful exchanges of love between his pure devotee and Krishna. Pretty mysterious exchanges of love, but exchanges of love nonetheless. And Bhishma Dev attained spiritual perfection. If one's mind is absorbed in material affairs, one is going to take another birth. One's mind is absorbed in impersonal Brahman, one will go to the impersonal Brahman. One's mind is absorbed in the personal feature of Krishna, one goes to Krishna. They're different destinations, not yatomat tatopat. All paths lead to the same place. That's not so. Knowing that Bhishma Dev had entered into the ultimate eternity of the Supreme Absolute, all present there became silent, like birds at the end of the day. Nice metaphor, huh? This is very, especially in Vrindavan and Mayapur, where there's lots and lots and lots of birds. It's very appropriate. In the morning they get up and they're singing and they're singing and there's different melodies. Especially in Mayapur, they have some really nice melodies. The birds, besides the kirtan singers. I can't imitate them like Dina Bandhu does, but... And during the day it's less, but there's some. Then at night, the stillness of the night, they're perched on the tree and very quiet. So all the personalities who had assembled there, the next verse explains, both men and demigods, the persons from other planets, they heard Bhishma Dev, the human, the mortal, but as exalted as a demigod himself is going to leave his body. And so they came. They came to bring with them auspiciousness for the occasion, and softly they beat on different kinds of drums in the sky. And they showered flowers from the sky in showing their honor and respect. The sages, Vyasadeva and others, chanted Vedic mantras, creating auspiciousness for the occasion. And although he was already a liberated soul, Prabhupada explains like this, that the funeral ceremony was necessary, just for as an example to demonstrate. So Prabhupada explains that these, as usual, there's two classes of living beings: those who are connected and those who are disconnected with the Supreme. The material condition is, at least in terms of consciousness, disconnected, like a machine part that's separated from the machine. If you find, when you walk outside, a little screw or a little metal piece that came from some machine, electronic device or whatever it is, brush it aside. But if you have a machine that needs that one little piece, and otherwise it won't work, it's very valuable. You may pay a lot. I know they do this in America. They machines, and to buy a part, it costs so much. A car or motorcycle. You want a little part? You got to pay big money because the whole thing won't work without it. Do they do that here too? Oh, sure. This is India. Okay. So there's the disintegrated parts, and the process of hearing helps us become, again, integrated. Now, Prabhupada explains something that's important. In order for that integration process to begin, or the, he calls it the spiritual urge to begin, there has to be a fundamental understanding that this isn't a suitable place. There's something wrong about what's going on. So a thoughtful person, in order to become a devotee, he doesn't say it explicitly like this here, but elsewhere, in order to become a devotee, you have to be thoughtful. You can't become a devotee and just be a dull-headed person. Have to be a little thoughtful. And raise some fundamental questions. Like, how come everybody wants to be happy and they're not happy? How come nobody likes disease and everybody gets disease? Everybody gets old. Everybody has to die. Everyone wants to love others and be loved by others, and there's so much quarrel. There's so much dissension. Why? There's something fundamental in this whole picture that's just missing. What is that something? And one may not know what that something is, but to be inquisitive about that something. There must be an alternative to this way of living. How people, humans, are inhuman to each other all the time. Even good people become cruel. There must be an alternative to this, where that something that's missing is, the connection is made, and people don't live this way. What is that? So that's spiritual urge to again make spiritual connection. Here in the purport, Prabhupada is calling this Brahma Jigyasa. Even just, I don't know what it is, but I want to find out what it is. Jigyasa, inquisitiveness. So with that inquisitiveness, there's a sequence that follows. There's detachment from material affinity. With that detachment from material affinity, there's the capacity for increased knowledge of things more subtle, ultimately knowledge of Brahman. And then the impetus for devotional service, for acting in one's relationship with the Supreme. Revival by practice of the original position of the living being. Now that comes only when there's association with the devotee. You can't begin devotional service just by figuring it out on your own. It doesn't work that way. You begin devotional service, you begin the practice of bhakti when you receive bhakti from those that are carrying bhakti. And there isn't another way. Someone has some bhakti in their bhakti vessel and they just spill some on you. You get some bhakti. Only comes through the compassion or the mercy of bhaktas. And it connects very, very well with those that have this Brahma Jigyasa. An inquisitiveness about the spiritual alternative and a certain, at least a modest degree of detachment from material affinity. Madly chasing after sense gratification. People are mad that are madly chasing after sense gratification. You give them a little bhakti opportunity. And what are they going to say? I'm sorry, I don't have time. Or I don't, it's not a, I'm sorry. Get out of way. Get out of my way. I don't have time. No. I just read something, very nice something, about book distribution. One of the wonderful instructors in my life in Krishna consciousness has been the years and years and years of performing book distribution. And it's very purifying. Because you have to be in the mood of service. Being in book distribution means you go to meet all the whole spectrum of people. People that are leaving their homes, not looking for Krishna, and your life intersects with their life to say yes to Krishna. They're going away from Krishna. And your service is to get them to say yes to Krishna instead of no. And there's lots of no's. Sometimes they're mild, sometimes they're brusque, sometimes they're really harsh, sometimes they're dangerous. But whatever, it doesn't matter what people say no, you continue and give another person an opportunity to say yes. And it's just service. Service to Guru and Krishna and service to those, all living entities. So sometimes fruitive-minded, we were speaking of fruitive mentality really rubs the wrong way with book distribution when person after person says no. And just keep going with enthusiasm and enthusiasm. So this little message that was sent out was one very wonderful and even famous book distributor named Vaisheshika. When people say no, he ends the discussion by saying, "Well, sir or madam, thank you very much for giving me a little of your time. Have a nice day." And he says it with such genuine warmth that a number of people come back. They're so moved by how warm and genuine he was. They come back, they went, "Let me see that book anyway. Let me see what that is." And they take a book. Because they see the quality that he has is so attractive. Even when getting a no, he's not only neutral, he's happy that they gave him a little of his time, of their time. Detachment and knowledge and revival by practice of the original position of the living being. Yeah. It's a nice glorification here. Bhishma Dev was on the level of Brahma, Narada, and Shiva. He's a Mahajan as they are Mahajans. Brahma, Narada, and Shiva. And Bhishma Dev. He's up there. Pure devotee. Qualification on a par with the great demigods is possible only by attainment of spiritual perfection. Thus, Bhishma Dev was known all over the universe. O descendant of Bhrigu, Shaunaka. So this is Sutta speaking to Shaunaka, who is a descendant of Bhrigu. After performing funeral rituals for the dead body of Bhishma Dev, Maharaj Yudhisthira was momentarily overtaken by grief. So, Bhishma Dev is a family member. The Pandavas are the sons of Kunti. Kunti is the wife of Pandu. Pandu is one of the sons of Ichchavirya, who is one of the brothers of Bhishma Dev. So paternal grandfather, Bhishma Dev. And he just left his body. Not only he was their paternal grandfather, but in the absence of Pandu, he was their father. The replacement father. He cared for them like their father. And as Prabhupada has so many times said, the grandfather is generally more compassionate and affectionate than the father. That's understandable. The father feels he must discipline, and the grandfather is very relaxed. He's many grandfathers. I've seen some pretty grouchy grandfathers too, but yeah. Bhishma Dev died very happily, seeing Maharaj Yudhisthira on the throne. Otherwise, he would have long ago quitted his material body, instead of suffering agony over the undue sufferings of the Pandavas. This is an indication why Grandfather Bhishma stayed around. He could have left earlier. He wanted to see that justice was done. Now again, the oddity is that while he wanted to see that justice was done, he fought on the opposite side. But we've covered that. It's mysterious, but we covered that, why he did like that. It was for rasa purposes. He knew the Pandavas couldn't be defeated. He knew it. He told Duryodhana again and again. He told him before the battle, during the battle, and Duryodhana didn't care to hear it. Bhishma Dev was simply waiting for the opportune moment for leaving his body, because he was sure and certain that the sons of Pandu would come out victorious in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, as his lordship, Sri Krishna, was their protector. As a devotee of the Lord, he knew the Lord's devotee cannot be vanquished at any time. Now, he's also the devotee of the Lord, and he was vanquished. But that was also the Lord's plan, to teach a certain lesson. What was that lesson? Doesn't matter who you are. If you fail to give proper protection to women, you'll be defeated and destroyed. Krishna wanted to teach that lesson, and through Bhishma he taught that lesson. Prabhupada explains like that. Maharaj Yudhisthira was quite aware of all these good wishes of Bhishma Dev, and therefore he must have been feeling the great separation. He knew. Bhishma Dev knew the Pandavas' feelings, and Pandavas knew Bhishma Dev's feelings. They're intimate. He knew. So now here, so this is some lesson about not only how to die, but how to deal with a great devotee who leaves the world. Another important lesson. Yudhisthira is facing that lesson. The affectionate grandfather, well-wisher Bhishma has just voluntarily left his body. So he's feeling great separation. He was sorry for the separation of a great soul, not for the material body which Bhishma Dev relinquished. That's important. Since Bhishma Dev was without issue, the eldest grandson, namely Maharaj Yudhisthira, was the rightful person to perform this ceremony. Now Dhritarashtra could have also taken that charge, except for one thing, he was blind. So it's the eldest son. So Bhishma Dev had no sons, and therefore his brother's sons. Vidura wasn't there. Pandu was deceased, and Dhritarashtra was blind. So the eldest grandson. Fitting. Yudhisthira took that charge. It was a great boon to Bhishma Dev that an equally great son of the family took the last rites of a great man. This is in part, it's a gesture or an expression of honor. The eldest son performs this task, and how wonderful that such a qualified person as Yudhisthira performed the funeral for Grandfather Bhishma. There are just three verses left. All the great sages then glorified Lord Sri Krishna, although the occasion is the departure of Bhishma. Fitting, on such an occasion, they glorify Krishna. Who was present there? They glorified him by confidential Vedic hymns. Then all of them returned to their respective hermitages, bearing always Lord Krishna within their hearts. Just going to read a bit. The devotees of the Lord are always in the heart. This is a theme, a Bhagavatam theme. So listen carefully. The devotees of the Lord are always in the heart of the Lord, and the Lord is always in the hearts of the devotees. That is the sweet relation between the Lord and his devotees. Due to unalloyed love and devotion for the Lord, the devotees always see him within themselves and the Lord also. Although he has nothing to do and nothing to aspire to, he is always busy attending to the welfare of his devotees. He's busy. He who has nothing to do is always busy. In other words, nothing to do means I have an obligation. Krishna has no obligation. What he does is out of affection and love. That's Krishna. And he has a lot of devotees. But he's very busy. He's busy with what he loves doing. That's reciprocating the love of his devotees. For the ordinary living being, the laws of nature are there for all their actions and reactions. So he reciprocates with the non-devotee who is thinking, I want to be away from Krishna. Okay, you can be away from me. You're under the charge of my external energy. Maya, please take care of him. And Maya takes care of him. But for the devotee, Krishna is always anxious to put his devotees on the right path. So nice. And Prabhupada's writings, so it's like poetry. Even just the meter of it, it's just so nice. Someone asked a question. Satyavrata asked the question. Are we under the direct care of Krishna? Here it is. The devotees, therefore, this is putting the devotees on the right path. The devotees, therefore, are under the direct care of the Lord. And the Lord also voluntarily puts himself under the care of his devotees only. And so, Vyasadeva, a literary incarnation, but also in the role of a devotee of the Lord, he took up this responsibility from the priestly side of the ceremony. And various Vedic scriptures were sung, which Vyasadeva had composed to honor and glorify Krishna. Perfect arrangement, huh? The sages therefore performed the exact acts suitable for the purpose, and they happily departed for their respective hermitages. So then, just two remaining. Bhishma went back to Hastinapur along with his brothers. They set about the task of pacifying Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. And that's a whole scene too. It doesn't elaborate on it, but there's a whole scene that takes place. Gandhari becomes, she expresses her strong anger. She's an ascetic, but she's so unhappy that she lost her 100 sons. And first she unleashes that on Yudhisthira. And then on Bhima. And then on Krishna. Doesn't give the details, but it's in Mahabharata. This is when Gandhari utters the curse upon Krishna. And afterwards, as soon as she says it, she feels terrible having said it. But just as I have lost all of my sons, you will lose all of your sons. And that curse of Gandhari was in the form of that iron, whatever it is, ball or piece of metal that Samba was put under his cloth. You know that story. It was Gandhari's curse. And all of the members of the Yadu dynasty were destroyed. Gandhari's powerful, huh? Of course, it was the will of Krishna that she speak like that to him. And he accepted. Thereafter, Maharaj Yudhisthira at once went to his capital, Hastinapur, accompanied by Lord Sri Krishna. And there he consoled his uncle and aunt Gandhari, who was an ascetic. And in just as Bhishma is a very difficult, very wonderful, but also difficult to understand person, Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, they are also. They're very unusual, special personalities. After this, last verse of the chapter, the great religious king, Maharaj Yudhisthira, executed the royal power in the kingdom strictly according to the codes of royal principles approved by his uncle and confirmed by Lord Sri Krishna. So Yudhisthira was trained and he executed things exactly according to his training. The main training is give protection and lead the citizens in the path of progressive spiritual attainment while executing their duties. So that he did. Maharaj Yudhisthira followed these principles strictly, as will be seen in the next chapter. Not only did he follow the principles, but he also got approval from his old uncle, who was experienced in political affairs, who's the old uncle? Huh?
Dhritarashtra.
Yeah. Yeah. Who was experienced in political affairs, and that was also confirmed by Lord Sri Krishna, the speaker of the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. Last paragraph, Maharaj Yudhisthira is the ideal monarch, and monarchy under a trained king, like Maharaj Yudhisthira, is by far the most superior form of government, superior to modern republics, or governments of the people by the people. The mass of people, especially in this age of Kali, are all born Shudras, basically low-born, ill-trained, unfortunate, and badly associated. They themselves do not know the highest perfectional aim of life, therefore votes cast by them actually have no value, and thus persons elected by such irresponsible votes cannot be responsible representatives like Maharaj Yudhisthira. Now, Prabhupada was cautious when he would speak things like this, because he knew that he was powerful, the words are right, and you know, some government leaders might start to think, wait a minute, this man's a revolutionary. He may stir up the people, and we got a problem in ruling the people here for this Swamiji going around. He was careful. But glorifying Maharaj Yudhisthira in this way is appropriate. And the system of democracy, it's spreading. It's not like, you know, it's spreading by military enforcement. It's spreading. And the alternatives to democracy are also crazy. It's one variety of crazy, another variety of crazy. Take your pick. Both are insidious. What to do? Where's Maharaj Yudhisthira? Where's that royal noble king? And so in this age of Kali, Prabhupada knew very well, he's speaking what government should be, and there isn't the likelihood of manifesting that government, but at least that's real government. And so the alternative is to encourage people in general to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, that they get the light of the Bhagavat into their life. And whenever possible, Prabhupada was very keen in encouraging government leaders to understand the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and the bhakti process. And one of our great generals in the battlefield, Bhakti Tirtha Swami, was especially gifted at this. In his world travels, he has been meeting with government leaders all over the world. I mean, not just small countries, but big countries. He's got a big name for himself. And he's going to disappear from the battlefield. That's really unfortunate. Because it's a field that he was highly effective in, and Prabhupada personally did that himself. And it takes a very gifted person who can do that. So it'll be a big loss. Because what's needed is that government, people that can influence other people, that's the idea. And particularly they have resources at their disposal. And it's their dharma to do such things. From time to time, we invite such personalities to our big festivals. Like in Chicago, we invite the alderman, so it's a part of the city government structure, and he comes. But he comes because he wants votes. And the Indian community is a large part of his voting constituency, so he comes to our Rath Yatra. Sometimes he comes to our temple. But he does things to help our temple. I was just in Warangal before coming here, and for one day they have their annual Rath Yatra, and the mayor of Warangal came to the Rath Yatra, and he sat on the stage right next to me, and I spoke with him, and he spoke something half in Telugu and then half in English, and he has a great deal of appreciation for ISKCON. So I sat next to him afterwards. We were down in the audience. It turns out his son and his daughter live in America, not far from our temples, and they've never been to our ISKCON temples, but I'm going to see that his son and his daughter get an invitation for Janmashtami, and they come for, and they're properly received. So they'll have that similar, very nice impression, and they'll tell their father, and next Rath Yatra, he'll say, oh, my son and daughter went for Janmashtami, and that's just, you know, that's some appreciation. There's four kinds of, to help people practice Krishna consciousness, or put it this way, there are four tests of our preaching that people surrender their life, or people surrender their wealth, or people surrender their intelligence, or people surrender their words of appreciation. And at least they should offer their words of appreciation. Like these people that met the book distributor, Vaisheshika. And even they weren't interested. He was so nice that when they left, they're feeling he's nice. So much so they even came back and bought a book, some. Many would do like that. So when we interact with people and they know that we're devotees, our interactions, our qualities should be such that even if people aren't interested, they should feel, these are nice people. On three occasions, I met one mother of a devotee. The devotee's name is Madhusudana Das Adhikari. Very nice devotee, very humble and gentle. And I met his mother on several occasions. And, you know, quite elderly Jewish lady. And as soon as she sees a devotee, she just sits up and she lights up, becomes very happy. I met Swamiji. And everyone goes, ooh, what was it like? And she would say the same thing every time. He was such a nice man. She didn't understand who he was, but she had a very clear sense. Such a nice man. Perfect gentleman. I felt so good being with Swamiji. So you get the idea? She didn't have any transcendental anything. But her feeling was great appreciation. Perfect gentleman. Or the home where Srila Prabhupada first stayed, Sally Agarwal. You know, in the refrigerator were unmentionables. Mr. Agarwal was not a vegetarian, nor was Sally. But I don't know if you've seen that video, you're ever well wisher, but when she speaks about Prabhupada, she's glowing. She didn't understand who he was. But he was such a delightful person. The most wonderful person. It was the most wonderful person I've ever met in my life. Now, if you recall seeing the pictures of Prabhupada holding the little hands of the son of Sally Agarwal and whatever Mr. Agarwal's name was, and his name was Bridge. So Bridge now is grown up. He's no longer a little kid. He lives in St. Louis, and our temple president met Sally Agarwal, who was coming to visit her son Bridge, who works in St. Louis. She came to the temple, and she said the same thing about Prabhupada that she said on that interview. Such a delightful person. Such a wonderful person. And she has, you know, she visits the Hare Krishna temple in St. Louis when she comes. Just that little association that she had with Prabhupada. She didn't do any sadhana. She didn't, who knows what she did and didn't do. But she has an attraction now for Krishna. Deep. That was planted, so, by Srila Prabhupada. And appropriately so, he stayed in their home. They were the ones who gave him his, you know, his invitation for his tourist visa to come. So while we want people to surrender their lives to Krishna, we also, these other levels of involvement or offering to Krishna something that they have, at least their words of appreciation, at least that much. We should live our lives in such a way that when we interact with others, they may not even know that we're devotees. If they just appreciate, this is a nice person, they'll benefit spiritually. This is very nice food. People like prasadam. They don't know that it's Krishna prasadam, but they like. People benefit. And that's what a good person wants to do, is that their life somehow benefits other people. They live their life so that it's of benefit for other people. So what to speak of living your life so it's of topmost spiritual benefit, that Krishna comes into their life. That we can live our lives such that Krishna comes into our life, and in such a way that Krishna, through us, Krishna comes into the lives of others. Especially valuable is through this medium of the holy name and the holy scriptures. I just received a letter. This is another anecdote, and I'll end. Just received a letter today that one devotee that lives in America, an Indian-born person lives in America, and in his place of work, there's a co-worker that has some kind of chronic problem, disease problem with one of their relatives or something like that. So just from interacting with a person, with a devotee, they don't know he's a devotee, but they found out that his brother knows something about astrology, and can your brother do something to help us understand the situation and what to do? So this devotee said, let me give that. So he gave the information, gave some astrology information, and said, my brother wanted me to give you these gifts. Here's a Harinam chatter. He didn't say what it was. Just, this is, you know, is this like a shawl? And here's some special prayer that you can say. He gave him the Hare Krishna mantra, and every day you should do like this, and showed them how to chant one round. A week later, the person came back and said, I feel so contented. I feel so happy. You know, they don't know what they're doing, Hare Krishna mantra. But it's having an effect, because they have some trust in the person, and the person says, here, this is good for you. So we have a very, very wonderful treasure. We've been given it, and we should value it. We should be very grateful for it. And we should share it with others. In such a manner, in these different ways, people will become transformed, at least even a little bit. And then some persons can actually give their lives. And those that give their lives, we then owe them the opportunity to get the real thing. To provide the genuine manifestation of Krishna consciousness through proper association and training. Okay. Any discussion? Or questions from anyone? Yes.
How do you understand the passing away of some certain devotees, like accident or something like
that? Like Tamal Krishna Maharaj? I know how I understand it. In his particular case, it wasn't in Mayapur, but it was still in Navadvip, in the holy dham of Navadvip. My understanding is that Krishna wanted to engage him elsewhere, or Prabhupada needed his service elsewhere. Some special service elsewhere. And he certainly could have gone on and helped our society. He was helping our society in many ways. But Prabhupada had some other service for him. I could say other things, but I think that's the main thing. It's how I understand that situation. He helped start and develop our Krishna consciousness movement. He inspired and guided many, many people. You know, in private communications, he was inspiring and guiding many of our leaders in his kind, in his own special way. Prabhupada had some other service for him. And whether it's abrupt or like Bhakti Tirtha Swami is leaving, a bit more gradual, that's his understanding too. Prabhupada has some other service for me. He's ready. Prabhupada's association. He died. Because that's where his heart's attachment is. Just with complete abandon of safety. Just surrendering to Prabhupada. Taking all risks to serve his spiritual master. Prabhupada is calling him. Anything else? Yes. How to understand the material position of the Pandavas? The which? I don't get your question. Do you get the question?
Yes, that Bhishmadev is a Mahajan.
Bhishmadev is Mahajan, yes.
At any time he could have. But he is concerned that the Pandavas should be reinstated in the throne.
He was concerned, yes.
How is that such a great Mahajan is concerned about the material position?
Because it's Krishna's desire. Not a material position. It's Krishna's desire. Krishna desired it. He wanted to have... Krishna wanted to leave the world in the care of the most virtuous king. And Duryodhana was the opposite side, the dark king. Okay? Yes? Good. Yes. What Rupa Goswami calls it is Abbas. Was it? Not Bhakti Abbas, but there's... Is it Bhava Abbas? Anyway, Krishna gives a little glimmer in this place of darkness. He gives a little indication. And whatever that is, there are natural feelings of attraction for Krishna and attachment for Krishna and deep spontaneous feelings of affection for Krishna. They're there. And hearing these messages stir that. So on whatever level, it's something genuine. And it may very quickly subside. It's like stirring coals. Right, in a fire, so it looks just, there's ashes covering everything. And you stir a little, that get a little oxygen in, and now you see that it's hot in there. If you do like this, then it can make a flame. Just a little oxygen, then you see the red. It's stirring. There's attraction for Krishna. Natural. It's like people, like your experience at these revival concerts. People that don't know nothing from nothing. Whatever, you know, they think they know something, and that's generally a disqualification rather than qualification. But when they're in contact with something genuine, they feel something. And it may, you know, 5 minutes later, or 1 hour later, or 24 hours later, it subsides. Or 5 days later. But for that period of time, that's something, it's a genuine feeling. It's of the soul. And so we should go on hearing and kindling that flame of attraction for Krishna. Especially in the association of other devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam is a literature like Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's meant for being heard and discussed in the association of devotees. It's best in that way, discussing. That's why I wish we had more questions. Because discussing the topics of Bhagavatam is even nicer than speaking them or hearing them. Discussing the topics. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.